Hi, I'm Chris Adams. I'm a jeweller in Featherston and I manufacture jewellery.
And we're here in your beautiful studio that you have created out of a garage.
That is right, yeah. So it took probably about a year to do and have done pretty much most of the building all by myself. Yeah, it still needs to be wired up and done properly, but as far as it goes now, I can do pretty much most of what I need to do, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your background. When did you discover your affinity for making jewellery?
Okay, through school, I did a careers course called Career Planning and Employment Skills. I would have been about 16, and I was thinking of things that I could possibly do when I left school, because seventh form wasn't exactly looking like too much of an option at that stage. So I was talking to my grandmother and talking about the course, and she had a friend in Masterton who was a jeweller, and she thought I liked making model aeroplanes, liked buildings, so maybe the jewellery trade would be something that I'd be interested in. So from there I looked around a few Wellington places that I knew manufactured jewellery. And I managed to get a placement with Village Goldsmith in Wellington. And yeah, from there, they said I could, if I was interested, they had a place going as an apprentice. From then, I accepted quite happily because it was definitely something that I was interested in doing. From there, I studied 4 years as an apprentice jeweler and pretty much learned most of what I needed to learn, really. They were really good. It was a great place to study, actually. I don't think there could probably be many better places. They had all of those facilities you could ever want. Then from there, I decided to take a little break because I'd done my studies, I'd finished it, and I thought maybe university would be a potential thing. So I'd studied a year in fine arts, philosophy, and classics. I thought they might tie in with the design part of jewellery. That didn't go quite so well, but I learned a lot. I did pass a few papers. It was mainly financial, actually. Just studying. I missed having an income, and living on a student loan wasn't to me that pleasing at the time. Yeah, so from then I managed to find. There was a job going at Gold or Silver Mine, another jeweller in Wellington off Left Bank, who has just recently changed owners. So I worked there for 2 years. I learned a lot from another one of the senior jewellers there. It was great. Then I also worked in Auckland, so that also helped me. That was the first time that I ever got to manage a workshop by myself and look after all that. And then I did some experience in Germany as well. Was it the last year or the year before? About a year ago, I did around 6 months in a German jeweler's, and that was a great experience. It was great to work with people in a different language and just learn new techniques that I'd never really seen before. Yeah. And then, obviously, when I got back to New Zealand, it was look for a job or try and make one, really. So, and this is kind of where I'm at the moment.
What is the name of your company now?
Nice and original. It's Chris Adams Jeweller. Okay. Yeah.
So you've had extensive training, and going through that apprenticeship scheme must have been an incredible experience. Can you remember your first day on your apprenticeship?
Yeah, I can actually. It's all strangely close, but strangely distant, because it is now, I think, it must be 15 years ago when I did that. So, but no, I can definitely remember my first day and just worrying about everything and not knowing, you know, whether I was just simply standing in the right place, let alone thinking, like watching these people making things that just looked so far from anything that I would ever be able to make myself. Probably took 2 years till I actually started going, oh, actually, I can see how that was done and I could probably have a go at that myself. Even then, it was, yeah, quite a kind of worrying 2 years at that point, yeah. But
how does an apprenticeship like that start? Do you do a lot of observing at first, or are you actually given practical things to do?
I'd say first it was a bit of observing for probably a week, but then by a week they'd kind of seen that I could do basic soldering and other things. So the first kind of thing they do is put you on to repairs. That's kind of like a backbone of jewelry. It kind of helps people, I guess, come in and a lot of the reason why people first walk into a jewellery store is because they've got something that needs repairing. So obviously there's a lot of repairs, and as an apprentice it's probably more often than not your responsibility to get those things like sizings and you know, lengthening a necklace or shortening. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Basic, but still important repairs, I guess, yeah. Mm. Yeah. I'd say by 2 years after doing a lot of repairs, yeah, every day, it gives you an idea or an understanding of how the jewellery is made, because you're working with antiques, you're working with modern things, you're working with some contemporary pieces, you're working with things that are amazingly built, and you're looking at things that are less than ideally built. So, yeah, just working with repairs for 2 years gives you a really good understanding of how jewellery should really be made, yeah. And yeah, by that 2 years, I'd say that was when I kind of, it all started to click and you kind of could get a good understanding of what was required.
Yeah. Did you know pretty early on into that apprenticeship that this was for you, that suddenly something had clicked and creatively and you know, mentally this was ticking all the right boxes?
Yeah, I think from the start, pretty much, I knew that it was something that I would love to do, because at school my favorite subject was metalwork, design, technology as well, which was kind of a cross between design and metalwork, so you could design and make something, and art, it just basically it brought together everything that I like to do all in one. So so to me I didn't really question it so much, actually. It felt natural, really. Yeah.
So you've set up business on your own now, which is fantastic. Can you describe to me your style?
I like looking at very ancient jewellery. I like looking at ancient techniques and styles. Well, at the moment I'm looking at enamelling, and so adding a bit of colour to jewellery that necessarily isn't there in kind of silver stuff, because silver can be a bit... Yeah, it's lovely. It's a lovely metal to work with, but it can be a bit bland if by itself. So adding colour to that can be quite lovely, actually. So at the moment, that's kind of the thing that I'm dabbling in at the moment. But also, I guess I like working with the metal itself. So trying to putting a large stone that is just, and having that piece of jewellery that is just the stone isn't really my favourite kind of job. I mean, I'll do it, but at the end of the day, something that I really like is to actually have the piece of jewellery speak, at least have a 50-50 marriage between the design and the stone itself.
We're in your studio and... we're surrounded by interesting looking equipment, including a slow cooker.
Yeah, I do have a slow cooker. Yeah, that is that's filled with acid, so it's a pickling solution, and that basically removes, when you heat up any, most metals, they oxidize, and they get a fire scale on them, especially silver or anything that has copper in it. So that basically strips off the fire scale and allows you to work with the metal better. Yeah. This is bench rollers. Okay. So most of the working on metal is rolled, so you will so you can adjust the height of these and put... I don't know if I have any plate around. Should have some plate. Where is it? I did have... Oh, no, there it goes. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so you put it through.
They lift up. So you're putting a small piece of metal in through the rollers.
That's right, and you clamp it down.
Right.
And then basically the handle just turns, and each time you pass it through, it'll get smaller and thinner and thinner.
Oh yes, look at that. What kind of a metal is that?
That is sterling silver, so that is, yeah.
Where do you source your materials from?
New Zealand has a couple of companies, one up in Auckland, I'm pretty sure, it's Morrison Watson, and they do a lot of refining and things in New Zealand, and a lot of the materials they source is from New Zealand. So I like to try and keep things within the country, really. So a lot of authentic jewellery is getting melted down and discarded, and they've got a lot of rings to get rid of. Then more often than not, it'll be sent up to Morris & Watson and then melted. And then they purify it and get it to a level that's, you know, good enough to work. And it works really well.
And do you buy in big sheets, little sheets? How does it? I can't even imagine how you would like.
You can get in a few forms. So this here is sterling silver. I don't even think that's from Morris & Watson. I think that's actually an antique mirror that I melted down myself.
Oh, okay.
But it had the hallmark on it, so you know what it is, and I can test it. But another way is also you can purchase it in granules, and that's basically
a bag of silver granules.
Yeah, so that's pure silver. So that if I wanted to sell that as sterling silver, I would have to add 5% copper. Yeah.
And how much would a little bag of it's like a little jiffy bag of granules? How much would that cost you to?
Oh, how much was that? I think that's 200 grams, and I think that was around the $180 mark. So it's not obscenely cheap, expensive rather, silver. It's actually quite affordable compared to other things. So it does allow you to make, you know, substantially larger pieces that are a bit more fascinating to look at than, say, if you're working with gold all the time because of price restraints. Mm. So you have to work a lot smaller. So, yeah, silver is a nice metal for that.
So a 200-gram bag of silver granules, you could turn that into one large piece or several smaller pieces?
You'd probably be able to make quite a few large pieces. I've made a piece over here, actually. It depends on how much of it's silver, I guess. So that piece there, so that's...
Could you describe that to me? Because that is very...
Yeah, so the stone, it's two stones. One stone is a natural river stone from the area. I actually dug it up in the back garden. Just found it, and it looked interesting to me.
Kind of speckly, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like filled with kind of, I don't know, bits of quartz all the way through, but they're very regular, and it's kind of creates a nice. No, what did I think? I thought it kind of looked like a whale shark or something like that. Yeah. So then there's a aquamarine, which is a nice piece of aquamarine. And then it's kind of all suspended in a kind of a architectural kind of style fitting. Yeah, and that also has a rose gold fitting. I'd say this will be worn on a, probably on a black leather strap. Right. That would be the way I'd do that, yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And how long would this piece have taken you to make?
That took a day, yeah. So right. That was a good day's work, really. 8 hours, yeah.
And the aquamarine, you buy the stone in, and then you cut it to shape, or?
No, the stones come cut. We have a couple of stone cutters in New Zealand and gem merchants around. Stone cutting is a trade of its own. It's quite a precise and big setup. So I would like to look at it one day, but at this point, I'll probably stick to the jewellery at this stage, yeah.
Great. Now, are you able to demonstrate some of your jewellery making skills?
Yeah, sure. I could start. I need to turn these granules actually into bar. So I could do a melt, which would allow me to get these granules into a workable state.
Great.
Okay, so I can measure them out.
So you put a small amount into a... You know, what is this holder made of?
So that's a ceramic holder. It's called a crucible, and that allows you to heat the metal to the melting point. So this you can adjust. Basically, it creates a space for you to pour the metal into.
And you're just going to use a blowtorch?
So yeah, this is an oxygen and LPG mix. So the red is gas and the green is the oxygen.
So you're applying the flame directly onto the... Oh, it goes black.
So the silver will go black. That's actually the not-so-desirable bits in the gas. So when it's a really orange flame, you get a lot of blackening. But if you add more oxygen, it burns a cleaner flame.
And now the silver is glowing orange.
It's
bright orange.
And now they should start blobbing together with each other.
Definitely a lot more liquidy now. All happens so fast.
It does actually, yeah. With silver you can be a bit harder with it because it doesn't have copper with fine silver. If it's sterling silver, you have to use a slightly warmer and less oxygen. Use less oxygen in the flame. Otherwise you have a tendency to burn the copper inside the alloy.
So you're picking up the crucible with your pliers.
Yeah.
So and it's definitely a liquid now.
Yeah, it's definitely a liquid. Just a few spots that are a bit solid and a bit stuck. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so you might want to step back a little bit. It just doesn't fit, but sometimes you get a gas filled up and it does fit a little.
And it poured slinkily into that vice that you have there. That's just delicious. So now you've poured the silver into, what would this instrument be called? Or this?
What do you call it? A mould, really? A mold? It's just a mould. So it just does a square mould. So you've got square wire that you can make to plate by splitting it, by sliding it further that way. Or if you use the other sides, you also have round wire, which is quite nice.
And okay. There it is.
So there's the block.
Looks like a lolly.
Does. It's nice and shiny. Being pure silver, you get a lovely shine on it. Yeah, and then obviously from there, I can deburr it, clean it all off, and then it's great. That'll be ready for rolling, really. And then I can turn that into basically the next piece.
Now, you've got some beautiful pieces on this metal block. A gorgeous feather. Very delicate.
Yeah, that was just just a proof of concept, really. I was looking at doing a few kind of nature-inspired things, so I was kind of seeing how closely I could get something to look to a feather as possible. You know?
Yeah, and you've done an incredible job. What kind of techniques would you be using to make that feather look so feathery?
So it's a bit of forging. So so it's thicker in the centre and it kind of flays out to the edges and gets thinner. And then I've also used hand engraving to get each small strand of each bit of the feather from there. Yeah,
and the beginnings of a frog.
That is, the beginnings of a frog. That's going to be. I've been enamelling. I'll find the other piece that I've been enamelling. Where did I put it?
Now, personally, I'm a huge fan of enamelling.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see your enamelling.
Yeah, it's something that is. It's not so common actually these days. It is on the art scene, but not so much. Not many fine jewelers are doing it. So at the moment, I've been kind of working on making gherkins.
Oh yes, he's gorgeous.
So yeah. So I'm just trying to see what you can do, really.
Yeah.
So I was going to do some vegetable-inspired necklaces and pendants and earrings. Yeah. So this one is just half at the moment. I will be making. It'll be a full round gherkin. I'm using different colour greens to get the effects that I need to make it look as realistic as possible. This was a trial, first trial, so it's not as...
You've done a lovely job.
Yeah, it's looking quite good.
Looks like a gherkin.
Yeah, it does look like a gherkin, actually. It can be a bit better, but no, otherwise it's pretty there. The frog, the same. I'll be enamelling that and basically trying to get them as close as possible to the real thing. So when somebody looks at you, when it's on your clothing or something like that, people kind of have to have a bit of a double take.
Now, you do commission pieces, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, yeah, I do. I've done, since I've been open, I've done one at the moment. So that was lovely to do. It was an engagement ring. It was a very interesting design because she had a personal attachment to a certain leaf design, which is the ginkgo, because of her mum. So it was an important thing to her. So she wanted a ring that somehow incorporated that. And so, yeah, we did most of the correspondence through email and photos. Yeah, and it went really well, actually. It went surprisingly well. I was at first a bit concerned about doing everything through email, but now I really do think it's not a big deal at all, really.
Okay. Were you concerned because you didn't get to meet that person in the flesh and get to know them in that way, or?
Yes, that too. Also, I just think sometimes I always thought, you know, that through words, if it, you might lose something that the person's wanting through the design. But I think if things are written properly and you do good progress photos along the way and show the person how it's progressing, it should be no different really than meeting the person, in person. So.
Do you keep a sketchbook with you at all times and kind of, you know, madly putting down ideas?
Yeah, most of the time, if I have an idea, I'll do a really loose, rough, kind of gestural sketch. Nothing too detailed, but just so I simply don't forget the idea by the time I get home, which can sadly happen. I think it's the bane of a creative mind can be the memories aren't usually so great. So you do have to write things down if you can kind of get around to it. So writing down or sketching a brief, rough idea of what I want to do. And that'll generally get me to there.
Many artists and creative people describe, you know, when they're in that zone, that kind of they lose all concept of time. Is that the same for you in when you're actually making a piece of jewellery? Can you kind of lose yourself completely in that moment?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're really enjoying a piece and it's testing you and it's going smoothly, a day can go very quickly. I mean, it's a pleasure to actually be working, and a day can almost feel like an hour. It's that, yeah, if you're that involved with it. But obviously, if things are sometimes not going the other way, I haven't broken a stone yet of any decent size, but I have seen other people do it in front of me, and I think those days would be that'd end up being quite a long day. Yeah.
So. I guess with the metals like the silver and the gold, if you do make a mistake, you can kind of go back to its molten state and start again, potentially?
Yeah, absolutely. That's basically the best thing about working in metals, is that it's forgivable. You can pretty much repair most things. I don't think most things, there'd only be very few things that would be beyond repair. And the thing is, even when something's beyond repair, you can always remake it, and it should look exactly like the original. I guess we're kind of the ancient recyclers, really, because we can basically take anything, raw ingredients from anywhere, whether it be a secondhand mirror that my mother gave me, and then I can turn it into something completely new just by melting it down. It's a very satisfying thing to see something that's kind of at the end of its life and it is maybe beyond repair, and to be able to give what it was made out of, you know, that raw ingredient, a new life, is something new, is a great feeling, really.